Welcome back to East in the Arena, a place where we talk to East members about the unique things they do, why they do them, and how. I'm your host for today's episode, Mike Radomski, and I'm here with my partners, Sean Murley and Jeremy Levin.
Hey, everybody. This is Sean Murley.
Jeremy Levin here.
Today, we're going to be talking about burns and the evolution of telehealth in burn medicine, especially in rural areas. Our guest is Dr. Irma Fleming from the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. So without any further ado, let's get to the show. So guys, she's got quite a story about where she comes from, and to call it diverse would be an understatement.
I was born in Liberia, West Africa. My father is American from Gary, Indiana. My mother's Liberian. We moved to Gary, Indiana. Grew up in Gary.
From Liberia to Gary, Indiana.
I know, right?
Went to a boarding school, military boarding school, where they pushed Ivy League schools. They pushed a lot of other just predominantly white schools. And my dad's like, well, I want you to go to a predominantly black female college. So I went to Spelman College in Atlanta. From there, I went to then Meharry Medical School in Nashville. So I went from Atlanta, Nashville, and then I went to University of Chicago for surgery residency. And I did critical care fellowship there. And I did burn fellowship at Vandy.
She sounds like the quintessential overachiever. And just like many of us, mentorship played a huge role in helping her decide what specialty that she wanted to go into.
When I was at U of C, I met Lawrence Gottlieb, who is a plastic surgeon who ran our burn unit alone himself, did everything. And I loved hanging out with him. I enjoyed the critical care.
She found that burn surgery was the best mix for her.
It gave me the trauma rush too, but I also got some plastic surgery portions that I enjoyed. I said, I'll do burn. It's got all the components I like.
To hear her talk about why she likes the specialty is really inspirational.
Burn was the only specialty that I feel like actually treated the whole patient. And that's the beauty about burn. My burn team is head to toe. It's psychotherapy. It's dietary. It's physical therapy. It's child life if I need it. It's music therapy. It's pet therapy. So all of these components are involved in my burn care. And then once they get out, there's a safety net.
Such a wraparound model of care that I don't know if I feel in the same way as for like trauma and EGS compared to how she describes it.
Burns is kind of like liver patients where your outcomes, you have to watch them like a hawk and be on them all the time to make sure that graft stays healthy and the patient succeeds.
My social workers are also psychotherapists, so they manage reintegration into the world. So I feel like there was still this comfort zone, this blanket still wrapping the patient as they're going out into the world. And we actually addressed a lot of their social issues too in that, and this new life. They are not the same person they came in as.
I just find it very comforting to hear her talk. I mean, clearly she's passionate about what she does.
She's such a great speaker.
What you hear too, that rings, like it rings about her love for the specialty. It's not so much the burn care itself too, but it's the cadre of social circumstances and everything that surrounds the circumstances of the burn. Some of it's really quite beautiful.
It's a weird thing to say, but I do feel like a lot of our burn patients meet us for a reason. There's a reason, there's a change in their life or a transition or some metamorphosis that's supposed to happen to them that they could not do without this traumatic event. And then they needed this group of special people to help them through this darkness to bring them on the other side.
It's really a unique perspective that's maybe shared by other burn surgeons, but I've never, ever heard it vocalized like this.
Like, that's such a beautiful sentiment. She used the word metamorphosis, and quite literally, right, you're grafting skin into other areas and changing the look of a patient to try, like, it's, she clearly feels very strongly and passionately about what she does.
I know. I mean, if everybody loved their job the way she does, the world would be a better place. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about how burn care set up at her institution and how her team has leveraged the resources available to them to better take care of patients.
My ORs are right there. My OR is in the burn unit. My clinic is right next door.
Wait, hold up. What's that about? Her OR is in the burn unit?
At Utah, they have their burn OR for their debridements and their grafts is right there. So there's no going to a different floor. They have their essentially own dedicated OR suite, which is, that's clutch. Like, imagine if you had like in the trauma ICU, your own trauma OR for all your take backs, right? You didn't have to wait to get on the board. You just went because you had your own OR. God, that'd be nice.
Well, we can dream, can't we?
My therapy gym is huge. Like, all of these things are ready and available to me.
It goes back to designing a system around your patient population. So if they are creating their own burn center, they're expecting a lot of burn patients. And so they design a system that helps to care for those in the most optimal way.
I mean, that rings back to our first episode with Jill Streams, right? It's dead on. Yeah.
Well, it's not all sunshine and roses. They had some specific problems that affected them that they had to learn the hard way and come up with creative solutions for.
Dealing with the rural areas around in the five states, because yeah, this 15-bed ICU is here, but we can't bring everyone from five states. So we had to figure out how to manage these people remotely and how to create this network of satellite facilities that felt empowered to manage these burn patients.
Can you imagine that? Like, I actually went and looked at a map because I don't really know the geography of that area. I just know it's like, there's like Idaho and I think Wyoming is near there. And you're talking about like population wise, it's not as big as urban centers on the coast, right? Like the population of LA is ballpark the population of probably these five states. But the sheer geography and the landmass you have to cover is crazy. So figuring out how to do that, it's kind of crazy.
Well, they realized other factors too that are affecting patient care. For example, the resources that these outside communities have. She talks about that a little bit here.
The beauty about us is when we do ABLS, like ATLS, we go out into these communities and you're talking to EMTs and you realize, oh, wait, all you can do is give Tylenol and aspirin? I have to really address what you're going to see and how you can manage this patient until they get to some critical access hospital. And so it was a different dynamic in how we teach people, utilizing the little resources we have, knowing that some of my patients don't want running water or would rather live in the mountains off the grid.
I can't think of how different I am compared to a human being that doesn't want running water. Like, we're just the most opposite people on the planet.
It was a huge culture shift for me because I'm used to being in big city, urban areas. Honestly, just coming to Utah, you just have to have an open mind. I'm going to learn what you do, and then I'm going to see what I can add to that.
She really built on that mantra. When she came to Utah, there was already a mature system in place and she built upon it. But it's important to remember that she had a good amount of support.
Luckily, Giovanni Lewis, who is our burn director now, was there for 8 years before I got there. Mm-hmm. So she kind of knew the system. And granted, we've changed a lot of the system now, but she felt very comfortable in that. We have a nurse, Annette Matherly, who does mass casualty, who's created these networks of remote hospitals that we feel comfortable with. We have Liz, who does our telemedicine, who does our teleburn, and who schedules them and all of these things. So I had this network of people I was coming into.
All of the people that takes to run a great burn center and all the support you need if you're a new burn surgeon or even established burn surgeon to do great burn care, right? So it's a lot.
It takes a village.
Exactly. It takes a village.
It's so important to know who each member of the team is and how to leverage to play to their strengths.
And things like, you know, when she named all these people, like to know you need all those people is something you just kind of have to figure out over time. Right? And you could probably make a roadmap for any new center, but you're going to have to figure out what you need for you, given where your location is. And clearly that's what they did.
So I think one of the first things to understand is how did their system work before and how did they implement a change in their system to make it work better for both them and the patients, as well as the referring physicians?
It would be a phone call to our burn center. The charge nurse would answer. They would email or text or random. We did photos somehow, whether it was HIPAA compliant or not. We got photos somehow. And we would see these photos and or we would have providers describe it over the phone. And then you start to realize not every provider understands partial thickness, full thickness. And you're like, does he have blisters? Is the skin peeling out? Like, you have to really explain it. And so we were admitting these patients who were like 1% burn or like a sunburn that didn't need to come necessarily. Yeah. But because the descriptors were wrong or we couldn't really understand or communicate well, we're just bringing people in.
So we know where that's going, right?
It reminds me of the necrotizing fasciitis that turns out to not be neck fascia. It's just cellulitis once it gets to your center.
I mean, Mike, how many calls have you gotten where you're like, this person doesn't need to come, but clearly the person on the other end of the line is, it's already been predetermined. They're coming because they're not comfortable, right? They want a higher level of surgical care, whatever that means, right?
Oh, it's an everyday occurrence. You always want to be that yes man. Never want to say no.
Somebody could call us and they would send us a 90%. They would say it's a 90% burn. And then we get the patient. They're just sunburned with like 5 little blisters on them.
Yeah,
you flew from Wyoming, but you go home tomorrow. So you have to come up with transportation tomorrow. Patients aren't very happy with that. So being able to see it beforehand and say, oh, actually, that's not 90%. That's more like 3%. And this is what you do.
All right. So not the most ideal.
Can you imagine what kind of cost and resource utilization that requires for sometimes situations that are not indicated? I remember one time when I was a fellow, we had a patient fly from Grand Junction to Denver for a 1% TBSA burn, but it was to the hand. You know, they're flying over the Rocky Mountains to get to us. And there isn't really a regard of how to get that patient back to where they came from. So her team came up with some creative solutions that she's going to talk about.
We created a website that they could upload photos to. The issue was they would have to go to one of our satellite facilities that had a contract with us, and then we could send them.
They leverage technology to their benefit so that they can manage burn in a huge area and really have an enhanced ability to triage patients and get them to where they need to be.
So let me make sure I understood this correctly. When the patient presented to, say, an emergency department, the providers there could then upload a photo to their platform?
Well, I think they had to go to satellite sites that they had an agreement with, because it's all to be done in a HIPAA-compliant manner. So I'm sure there was paperwork that had to be filled out. So more convenient, but still not terribly convenient.
When COVID hit, it shifted our mindsets, because then we created an app that anyone can send us a photo anywhere around the world. I would see it within a millisecond, and then my charge nurses would give the facility a call back with our transfer center if we wanted to transfer, mm-hmm. and say, hey, let's get this patient here. This is what you need to do in the interim. This is your resuscitation plan.
I mean, how great must that feel if you're the outside rural physician who is seeing a burn patient that you don't know how to resuscitate, and you can take a picture, send it to your burn center, who will then call you back, set up transportation, but in the interim, give you recommendations on the proper way to resuscitate the patient? I mean, I think that's pretty cool. Now, implementation of this app wasn't without problems.
One, it was easy to handle and easy to understand. Mm-hmm. Making it HIPAA compliant was the other part. People are taking photos on their phones. We had to make sure the photos weren't saved on their phones. As we were going around doing ABLS, we piloted it with the different facilities. And we say, hey, download the app, log on, take a picture of your hand or something, mm-hmm. send it to us so they could feel empowered to see how easy it was to do and not feel like it was some cumbersome thing.
It's not easy to use. People are not going to be facile with technology, specifically patients, right? Patients who don't want running water probably don't have the newest whatever. So they had to troubleshoot a lot in the app.
So this app was not just for other healthcare providers, it was for patients too?
Yes. Patients could download it. You could download this app and upload stuff, and Irma will see it. So, you know, behave yourself.
So what's really cool about this is that patients directly interact with the burn team. They can upload their own photos, have a consultation from the burn team, and if the team thinks that they need more care, the team can then direct them to go to another facility.
We then send them to an access facility. So they'll go to a remote facility that's closer to them, and then we'll do all the cares through them. If they do have Wi-Fi or the internet or some form of internet, we will interact with them directly, mm-hmm. whether it's through VidYO or some video teleconferencing and or just photos and over the phone. If not, if they have just a phone that they can send us photos in some way, shape or form, and we can speak to them over the phone, we'll do that too. So we try to make it as easy as we can for the patient.
You know, I think that's a really good point. Lowering the barrier of entry, particularly for patients, is really important. The easier you make it for patients, they're probably going to have better outcomes because they're going to be more compliant with it.
We also want to make it safe for them. So if we find something that we really need to take care of, we'll just bring you in and not even deal with the remoteness of it.
Right. So she was starting before, if patients didn't have a phone or Wi-Fi or internet or whatever, they would just say, okay, this center's 50 miles from you, 20 miles from you, whatever, go there. Right. But if they didn't, then they could do all their follow-ups, instructional wound care, all that stuff through the app, right? Which is awesome.
So how do they document what their discussion is?
You don't need a contract with any institution. So any institution can call us, send us photos and say, hey, can you take a look at these? You may not be in work network for me to transfer you, but I can consult with you and that's recorded on the record.
So it seems like maybe the record of the conversation and perhaps a consult note. I think that these are all things that the collective us as a society are going to have to figure out what is the acceptable line in standards. This direct-to-patient care telemedicine model that they have developed really seems like it's going to be the future and the next evolution in healthcare. So remember how we were talking about those network of sites and the centers that are transferring burn patients to her institution? Well, she goes into detail about how they communicate with those centers and how it's really a collaborative relationship.
We do have an infrastructure that goes around and teaches them. Mm-hmm. More so before COVID, we would do it in person. Now we do it a lot more virtually. About burns, about mm-hmm. short-term resuscitation, some mass casualty information, especially the weather is unpredictable sometimes in the mountains, so they may have to keep a patient for a day or two.
Just because the patient hasn't arrived to their facility yet doesn't mean that they aren't taking care of them. They're still actively directing the resuscitation in communication with the transferring facility and the transferring physicians as well.
They take ownership of it. When you live in such a big area that you have to cover, that's what you got to do.
Granted, they're still in contact with us every hour mm-hmm. on resuscitation changes, but they still need to feel comfortable what to do. We're very involved. And usually if they can't get to us, they usually can't get to anyone. Almost hourly, every 2 hours or so, we're getting a call back. What's the urine output? What are their vitals? Change the fluids to this. Manage the wound in this way. Let's do sedation in this way. Make sure they're intubated and all these things. So we're constantly having those conversations with them.
They'll have patients that need to come, potentially patients that need resuscitation from how big their burn is. And because of the distance or the weather, they can't come immediately. And so this technology enables them to resuscitate at a distance in the same way that like a tele-ICU works. In the same vein as how they're granular, their resuscitation, right? There's a lot of patients that if they have unsurvivable burn injury, they're like 7 years old, have a Bose score of 1,000,000, then do they need to come to your center just to die, potentially hours and hours away from their family and their social network and their support network and all that stuff? And so teleburn is also telepalliative care and having those discussions. And she kind of gets into how this app allows them to do that.
Some providers will say, look, the family wants things done or they want them transferred. I don't want to be in the middle of that. Can we just transfer them? And we say, okay, fine. And then we end up having the palliative conversation when the family either gets there or over the phone with the family. Some providers are very open when I say, look, this is not survivable. I think if anything else, I can give them time with their family instead of time in the air getting transferred to me. I'd rather give you that time with their family. Would you mind having that palliative conversation? If not, I'm happy to do it over speakerphone. If you can put the family in a room, we can all have this discussion together. and I have had palliative care conversations over the phone, they have to know that my intentions aren't to not manage it. They have to understand I'm still caring for your family member, but now I'm just shifting my care from cure to comfort.
The ability of them to have these conversations and to have palliative care discussions at a distance and patients staying where they are if they deem them not survival is a pure reflection of how much they've invested into the region for education, for relationship formation, things like that.
So given that anywhere availability of the app, we asked her what was the most interesting consult she ever received. And while she got some from Cambodia and from the islands, this next one takes the cake.
The zoo got a consult for a giraffe with a chronic either wound or burn at the zoo. And you can't intubate a giraffe. It was either against like a radiator or I think some metal thing overheated during like the warm seasons or something. And they got burns.
Wow. So what did they end up doing?
We recommended some wound care. And I think the giraffe just got sicker in general after that.
They called the bird center.
A human bird center.
About a giraffe bird. How amazing is that?
That is wild.
The giraffe died. It's like the Bambi of bird. The giraffe dies.
So there were a couple of common themes that kept on coming up during our discussions. One was of outreach education and how important it is to make sure that your referring facilities in your surrounding area is comfortable taking care of these patients and then contacting you for support. The second was based around infrastructure and how it's important to have a good infrastructure to, one, take care of the patients, and two, review the consults that you get from the outside facilities.
And so your internal setup, you need to have a good outpatient clinic resources, clinic managers, somebody who's going to coordinate these teleburn visits, who's coordinating the photos, who's doing all of these things, nurses in the background. Your outreach setup, making sure you have an outreach coordinator, someone who to reach out to all these other institutions, making sure they have certain resources that you're going to need. And then that person will also have to circle back and give education. So having those educational resources available and then making sure you have the personnel to review them and give recommendations.
And finally, you don't need to start off big.
Ours started off with Dr. Saffel putting in a grant, and he just got webcams put in different clinics around these different states. And the patients would come to those webcams. And we started with these webcam visits. And with all of our phones having FaceTimes and all these different things, you can start as basic as that. Or you set up this platform that is HIPAA compliant that you can then upload photos to.
Well, there you have it. That concludes the show. I want to thank Dr. Irma Fleming for everything that she does and for her taking the time out of her schedule to talk to us and inform us all about her fantastic work. The name of the app that they use from the University of Utah Burn Center is the Burn Med Pick app. That's M-E-D-P-I-C app. It's available for both Android and for iOS on their respective app stores. East in the Arena is a product of the Educational Resources Committee and created by Jeremy Levin, Sean Murley, and me, Mike Radomski. If you want to check out other East in the Arena episodes or other East products, including TraumaCast and CareerCast, head on over to east.org or wherever fine podcasts are found. This episode was produced by me, Mike Radomski. Intro and outro music were produced by Matt Holzemacher. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.